Amen. I want to invite you to reach for your handout, and particularly to have the first side at the ready, the passage from Proverbs. As we talk about quest, you heard me ask the kids what quest they're on. I could ask you as a congregation as well, what is your quest? And I think most of us are taken aback by that question because we don't think of our life as being on a quest. We don't think of ourselves as seeking something, as valuing something or someone so much that it is the object of our pursuit and it guides and directs everything we do. And yet, we are all on a quest whether we recognize it or not. Some of us intentionally, some of us just wandering aimlessly, seeking to discover what it might be that we should be pursuing. All of us are on a quest for something. And that something is what I want to talk about this morning. And I want to begin by speaking of what Wizard of Oz, Lord of the Rings, Saving Private Ryan, and The Catcher in the Rye all have in common. And they all do have something in common. They're all quest stories. Every single one of them has a hero, or in the case of Catcher in the Rye, is somewhat an anti-hero, looking for, seeking something. In The Wizard of Oz, the Scarecrow, the Tin Woodman, the Cowardly Lion, they are all on a quest for virtue. The Scarecrow wants knowledge, insight, he wants brains. The Tin Woodsman wants compassion, mercy, he's looking for a heart. The Cowardly Lion wants to be brave. He wants to find courage. And of course, Dorothy just wants to find home. In The Lord of the Rings, Frodo, and in fact, all of his friends are on a similar pursuit, a pursuit that has to do with the elimination of evil. You could reduce The Lord of the Rings down to one simple story, and that is, what do we do with the evil in our midst? They have the one ring that rules them all. And that one ring could be abused for their own self-interest. It could pervert and distort their own lives. Or they could, as a community, actively seek to eliminate that evil so that their community can flourish. And that's what the story's about. We not only need to seek virtue, as in The Wizard of Oz, but we need to think about what do we do with the evil. I think it's funny that passage from Matthew 7 when Jesus says, "If you then who are evil give good gifts to your children," I couldn't get away with that in this culture. People, what do you mean, if you then who are evil? But of course, he's comparing that us to the Father, who is eternally good and faithfully good, understanding that when it comes to being like God, we all fall very short of that. Well, in The Lord of the Rings, the quest is to get rid of the evil. In Saving Private Ryan, the quest is to, through service and bravery and self-sacrifice, put their lives on the lines, all of Saving Private Ryan's soldiers, in order to save the last son of a mother who's lost all her sons in the war. And if Private Ryan is killed, she'll have no more children. And so Captain John Miller, who's played by Tom Hanks, enlists all of these soldiers in order to give themselves, even to the point of death if necessary, to save the life of just one. And then in Catcher in the Rye, Holden Caulfield is on a search, not for a tangible object, but he's just trying to find out if there's any meaning, any purpose. He's just trying to find something to value in his life. All of these stories are quest stories, and the reason why these stories make a lot of money and grab a lot of people's attention is because whether we like to admit it or not, we're all on a quest. We're all searching for something, which then leads us to think, what is it I'm searching for? What is it that is the object of my pursuit that I value so much it guides and directs my every action? And the author of Proverbs, knowing that we are all on a quest, tries to, at the very opening chapters of his book, say, I've got a quest for you. Seek wisdom with everything you got. And of course, that's what we find in our opening verses here. In verses 1 through 4, the author says, use everything you got, your will, your ear, your heart, your mouth, your hands, so that verse 1, my child, if you accept, the idea is you willingly accept these words. And then verse 2, make your ear attentive and incline your heart to understanding. And then verse 3, with your mouth, if you cry out and raise your voice. All these if statements, if is a conditional phrase. You learn this in hermeneutics, and we all kind of know it naturally. When an author says, if you do this, then this will happen, they are saying certain criteria must be met, or the then will never happen. And in verses 1 through 4, you have all these ifs. If with your will, your ear, your heart, your mouth, your hand, everything in you, if you seek for wisdom, verse 5, then, and only then, because these are conditional clauses, then you will understand the fear of the Lord, that is, you'll take God seriously, and then you'll find the knowledge of God. So that the goal here is to know God. To know God by knowing God's wisdom, by knowing God's prudence, God's virtues, the insight that divine wisdom brings. And then the rest of the paragraph that we have before us is all about the benefits. It's the carrots on the end of the stick, if you will, that the author is throwing out in verses 1 through 4. Pour your heart into this. Everything you've got, all your heart, soul, strength, will, everything. Then you find wisdom. And if you find wisdom, here's all its perks. Here's all its benefits. Verses 7 and 8. It'll be like a shield, and it'll guard and preserve. Those are military metaphors. He's a shield. He guards the paths of justice, preserving the ways of his faithful ones. All of those have to do with being delivered from evil and its ways. And then verses 9 through 10, wisdom will come into your heart. Knowledge will be pleasant. Prudence will watch over you. Understanding will guard you. Verse 9, you'll understand righteousness, justice, equity, every good path. You'll begin to see what's right and what's wrong. Your eyes will be open to that which is destructive and hurtful and unwise and ungodly. And instead, you'll come to know righteousness and equity and compassion and wisdom. And then finally, in verses 12 through 15, we're saved from the way of evil, which is to say, the wise person begins to have an ethical sensitivity to judge what is a destructive path and to refuse to follow others in that same destructive path. All these are the benefits of wisdom, but they're only given to those who seek. Because our author knows something that we all know intuitively. Not everybody's on a search for wisdom. Not everybody's on a search for virtue and goodness and God and righteousness and equity and justice. In fact, we live in a world where that seems to be a secondary or tertiary search, because the big searches are for things like wealth and fame and reputation and status, and on you go. We live in a world where the path of wisdom and its search ends up being kind of something on the side. It's a bypath you might take. It's something that you might encounter if you just happen to go down that rabbit trail, but it's not the chief quest. Well, it's a quest because it has to be. One of the things you might wrestle with, and I think that's part of this passage's enticement, is it challenges us to wrestle with, why does wisdom have to be a search? Why can't we just open up our brain, say, God, put the wisdom in, and then shut it? Why can't it just be that we ask and we have it, and that's all there is to it? Why can't it be that simple? It is a gift, after all. You'll notice verse 6, the Lord gives wisdom. But of course, that's said after all the conditionals, if, then. But why must it be a search? And I have two reasons why I think it has to be a search. One reason is it gives us direction. Once it's a search, then we have a goal in mind. We're not just wandering aimlessly. You know, the Tin Woodsman is looking for a heart, the lion is looking for courage, and that directs their whole life. They're guided now by this thing that is the pursuit of their passion. You know, people will say the journey is the destination, and they just basically say all of life's a journey, and the journey really is the destination. Don't worry about where it leads. And I sympathize with that, because the journey is important. The journey shapes us, it makes us. But the question is, toward what are we journeying? What is the goal? What are we trying to achieve? What are we trying to accomplish? What do we want to obtain? Because if we don't have a goal, if we don't have a direction, then really we'll just happen to luck upon it, if so be, but more likely than not, we'll not achieve that which is of ultimate value. So our search gives direction, but even more than that, it reveals the value of that which we are questing for. Whether you like him or not, the scarecrow in Wizard of Oz. He's dopey. He can do some really odd things. But you got to give him credit. He knows what's of value. He wants insight. He'd like to have some brains. He may not have it at the beginning, but it's through the process of pursuing it that he finally obtains it. And that's true of every story we have. The Lord of the Rings characters, they understand that we cannot flourish as a community with this evil in our midst. This must be eliminated or none of us will flourish. So that we've got to join together to get rid of this or all of our lives are in peril. And that's what determines and leads their quest. They value community. They value flourishing. In Saving Private Ryan, much like the best of soldiers, the soldiers all value self-giving, self-sacrifice, serving another. And they value that sacrificial service to such an extent they're willing to lay down their life for the good of just one. In our Catcher in the Rye, Holden Caulfield, he values meaning and purpose, even though for the most part he's wandering, but he's wandering with a goal in mind. He'd like to make sense of all the craziness that he finds himself immersed in the 60s. So that a search, it gives direction, it reveals what we value, and at the end of the day, we need to have both of those things, because I can show you that our world has no interest in saying, seek God, seek wisdom, seek insight, seek prudence as the priority. You know why? People magazine has yet to have the 100 most wise people in America. But it seems absolutely intoxicated with the 100 most beautiful people and the 100 most powerful people and the 100 most rich people. It's absolutely intoxicated. It's like, wow, they got it. They found what really matters. But we're never going to read a people, at least not in my lifetime, I think, the 100 most wisest, the 100 most compassionate, the 100 most self-giving, the people you don't know at all who have given their lives in pursuit of wisdom in a way that hasn't led to fame or reputation or economic status, but in a way that perhaps the God who has created them might say, well done. You're pursuing what really has value. Our world isn't going to help us in this quest. Our world isn't going to say this is of utmost priority. That's why the author of Proverbs is so emphatic. At the end of the day, you may remember this quiz show, 10 years ago was a huge success. Who wants to be a millionaire? Which is a stupid question. Who doesn't want to be a millionaire? I mean, that's the answer is obvious. You know, who wants to be a millionaire? Everybody. But I guarantee a game show named Who Wants to Be Wise would be canceled by the second episode. No one would be interested. That's not nearly as exciting. And the fact is, you can't obtain wisdom through a game show anyway, because it demands the whole of one's being through the course of one's life, seeking with passion and direction that which, for the most part, is not going to be seen as of having much value in our world. All of this is to say, do you pursue this? Is this your quest? Because that's what the author is trying to get us to think about. Is this the quest we're on? Are we at least expending as much effort pursuing wisdom and God as we are pursuing beauty and power and wealth? And to the extent we're not, to that extent we are failing this, if you do this, if you do this, then. That there must be at least an equal amount of pursuit, in fact, I'd say a greater pursuit. It's interesting, I have one kid in college, I have one kid that's about to enter college, and anyone who knows about college will know that there's been a terrible kind of tracking and a degrading of college education in this sense. It used to be, before my day, and then a little bit during my day when I would have gone to college if I had gone right out of school, that if you went to college, you immediately went into a liberal arts, so you could understand humanity. You can understand culture. You can understand societies. You can understand what life might be about. And you read the philosophers and you thought about things that had to do with the humanities. Because an education meant learn the humanities, learn the liberal arts, become a person who's well-rounded, who understands that life matters and it has meaning more than just what the big focus is on now. Focus on economics. College is about what classes do you need to get the pay grade you want. What classes do you need that'll make you an effective worker making the big bucks? not about understanding, not about life. Just what does it take so you can be truly successful and walk away here making more money than you'd ever thought possible? That's our world. And our author wants to make sure we understand something, that wisdom is not achievable if that's also our pursuit. He says in chapter 3, "Blessed are those who find wisdom and those who get understanding, for her income is better than silver and her revenue better than gold. She's more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire can compare with her." Silver, gold, jewels. And our author says, you know what? Those things are nothing compared to wisdom. Wisdom is what has value. You see the same thing in verse 4 of our reading. "If you seek it like silver and search for it as hidden treasures, then," verse 5, "you'll have the fear of the Lord. You'll take God seriously. You'll find the knowledge of God. You'll receive the gift of wisdom," verse 6, and so forth. All of this, as we draw to a close, is a way for our wisdom writer to say right from the beginning, attaining wisdom doesn't happen by accident. It doesn't happen by osmosis. It doesn't happen naturally. If you just follow the natural course of the world, you'll be swept up in the beauty, power, and riches. What wisdom demands is a sense of pursuing it wholeheartedly, understanding that this will be a quest that will take my entire life, but it is the only quest that in the end offers the true beauty, the true joy, the true wisdom that God offers those who search. The author invites us to an aggressive search and a deliberate decision, and I guess this then challenges us as readers and listeners to ask ourselves, do we put in any time at all? I mean, any. You're here on Sunday morning, thank God for you. I appreciate it. But if all you're getting for pursuing God in your wisdom is 1 hour on a Sunday morning, the world's power, beauty, success, wealth, it's absolute ignorance of the ways of God will wash over you and wash out that 1 hour a week, every week, so that you come back and say, wow, I didn't even think of that. Well, you could have thought of that this week. Open your Bible. Pray a little. Think about where God might be active in your life. Think about what God's will might be in this certain political situation, or what God's will might be in this situation that I'm in right now at work, or what God's wisdom might be as I see this devastating situation and where bad decisions led, or on and on you can go. We're challenged to put in time and energy to involve our whole person. Which is awful funny when you see the paradox in verse 6. I've invited you to pursue passionately, but isn't it interesting that at the end of the day, if we have wisdom at all, it's because it's a gift. Let me give you a great illustration that shows how that paradox works. In the last couple of years, you might have read this story. There was a New York couple that lived in a rural area in New York, and they bought a house, and in their yard there was this rusty old box at the base of a tree. It almost had been formed into the tree. It had been there so long, and there was all kinds of grass surrounding it, and they just saw this rusty metal box, and they thought, oh, it's an old electrical box, or it's some kind of cable box, and they paid it no attention. And then eventually deer came along, and deer ate all the foliage, and nature did her course, so that the box was there, very apparent in their backyard by the tree, and they finally decided, let's get rid of this box, let's do something with this box and pay attention to it. Well, they dug up the box, and when they opened the box, they found it wasn't a cable box, it wasn't an electrical box, it was a rusty old safe containing money, jewelry, and diamonds worth $52,000 that was unclaimed and thus became their own. The treasure was there the whole time. They just didn't seek it. They were ignorant of it. The whole time the treasure was there, but since it wasn't sought, they couldn't make anything of it. And in the same way, the treasure of wisdom's always there. It's always waiting. It's always available. God seeks us before we seek God. The question is, will we seek in return? And that's where I invite you to turn your handout over and realize this is how Jesus talks. Jesus doesn't just say, hey guys, you're sinners, but hey, my grace covers you and everything's okay. Just, you don't have to do anything. Just believe one thing and then everything's fine. Jesus instead says, ask, seek, knock. And when you ask and seek and knock, then God will give good things to you. But if you don't ask and you don't seek and you don't knock, don't count on it. I mean, it's not how it works. Asking involves also seeking. Many of us will ask on occasion, God, give me wisdom. But there's no use asking if we're not going to seek. Just like there's no use telling people you're in our thoughts and prayers if we're not going to do anything to help change the situation or, you know, provide some monetary help or something. It's what good is that? There must be an asking, there must be a seeking, and when there's a knocking and seeking, then it is that Jesus says, God's wisdom will be poured upon you, it will be gifted to you. So in conclusion, we have this wonderful dynamic, this challenge by our author of Proverbs to be on a quest, to search for something and in searching show what we value most, show what we treasure. Jesus, who himself says, ask, seek, and knock, sought not power, not wealth, not reputation, not fame. Jesus sought God. To do my Father's will is my food. Jesus sought the kingdom. In fact, he tells us not only to seek wisdom, but seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added to you. He gives us his own priority, and it still includes wisdom, but he takes it a little bit further and talks about God's kingdom. So we are to treasure and to value things that perhaps our culture has overlooked or could care less about. And then finally, we seek because it's meant to guide our journey. If you seek wisdom, there's not a single situation where it cannot be found. Just like seeking the kingdom, the reason why Jesus says seek first the kingdom is you don't have to go anywhere to find it. It's right here. It's always around you. God is Lord. God's kingdom is being worked out in our midst so that you don't have to go anywhere to seek it. You just have to try to open your eyes to it, to be aware of it, to try to connect to it, and to be a part of it. And in the same way, the wisdom's already always there, just like that rusty box in the back of the New York couple's house. It's there. It's a matter of looking. Because when bad things happen, we can ask ourselves, where's wisdom? What's wise? When someone's life self-destructs, we can understand, you know, there are consequences to action. What can I learn? How can I learn from even a negative example? When things go well, when things are challenging, wisdom is always available. So, how do you fill the blank? You are on the quest for what? Because we're all on a quest. We're all searching for something. Make sure that the object of your pursuit's worth the effort. And I hope in your seeking you find, like the characters in The Wizard of Oz, insight, brains, courage, heart, and compassion. I hope, like the Lord of the Rings, you find in your seeking of wisdom the way to eliminate evil, to work together as a community, to promote human flourishing. I hope, like the characters in Saving Private Ryan, you begin to see that sacrifice and self-giving and service are of value, and that one person matters, and that giving one's life for the good of another ultimately is the most Christ-like thing that anyone can ever do. And I hope, like the catcher in the rye, caught up in the whirlwind of the chaos of his own culture and us and ours, you find meaning, you find value, you find something that is so eternal that it is worth everything within you to passionately pursue. In the end, I hope you find God. Because when you pursue wisdom and justice and compassion and prudence and virtue, there's no doubt that lurking in the midst of all of that is God and God's will. And when you find that God, know that even that finding was a gift, because the Lord gives wisdom. So ask, seek, knock. Would you pray with me?